time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
And chance of MVP ringing around Minute Maid Park again with Jordan digging in. Jordan sends one to left field, all the way back. The ball's gone! Jordan points into the dugout on his way to first base with home run number 26 on the air. The big man gives the Astros a 3-2 lead.
Yeah, you think he could be MVP? 26 home runs in 73 games this season. That, of course, was sound from Jordan Alvarez's home run. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant joins us remotely. Hello, Paul.
What's up, Vanessa? How you doing?
I'm good. Sean Mapes behind the glass, as always. And we're rolling along. We made it to Friday, guys. TGIF. Rip James Caan. We will be talking about some of our favorite lines from mob movies throughout the show. If you'd like to text in the show and let us know yours. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones.
I'm so excited that I can continue to be borderline offensive to Italian people by speaking with an Italian accent.
Well, Sean and I were just, so you're Irish and French.
Mostly
you're not
Irish,
Italian.
French-Canadian, Scottish, a bunch of English stuff, but I don't acknowledge the English stuff because the English are the worst.
Okay.
But yes, zero Italian.
Zero Italian.
I am as ghostly as possible, and I wish I could tan. I am sadly not someone that could be an extra on the Jersey Shore.
Rip James Caan. We'll be talking about that throughout the show. But for right now, rip to Kansas City, am I right? The Astros taking that series 3-4. They win last night 5-2. And they close a road trip, which was a lot of games. We weren't worried about that game that they lost to the Royals for this reason. This has been a dominant team. And as you heard, Jordan Alvarez, Jose Altuve, all those guys once again stepping up where needed. I like what I'm seeing.
I do too. Allow me, though, to be a spoiled Astros fan for a while. This guy, Booby, or whatever his name was, the pitcher for the Royals, he's terrible, and it took them way too long to score. I was getting annoyed because this guy just kept on walking everybody. Walk, walk, walk. I mean, he had 6 walks in 5 innings, and until the 5th inning, the Astros were struggling to do anything with it. But then you get a Jose Altuve home run, you get the Jordan Alvarez home run that we heard. The Death Star offense for this Astros team is inevitable, but first world problems. That took a little too long to score. I'm going to be the whiny Astros fan that can't accept that his team is amazing today.
It's legitimate to be a whiny Astros fan because we have been so spoiled over the years here in Houston. But Verlander was good. He went 6 innings, 8 strikeouts. This is a guy that, especially with Lance McCullers Jr. out, we know Justin Verlander's good, right? But he really needs to be
is
on
he?
It. I think Justin Verlander is good at baseball, but he looked good last night, and the bullpen, continues to be, I think you could argue, one of the best bullpens in baseball.
I mean, statistically, that is true. Their ERA is number one. And all right, Phil Maton, you feel good with him. Presley, you feel good with him. Rafael Montero still scares the hell out of me, but good God, he was awesome in yesterday afternoon's game. Struck out the side, and that's the best he's looked. And he's been pitching a lot better. I still am a little bit traumatized from watching him pitch in Seattle, where he reminded me a lot of Ken Giles. But considering that they are shorthanded, and in a game where Verlander was good but not dominant, not great, that they were able to step in and really just completely close the door in an emphatic manner was nice, especially considering, you know, it wasn't the best day at the office for the Astros. The offense had plenty of opportunities, but they left some guys on base, and the defense wasn't the best either. A couple of ugly errors. Including one in the outfield. Did you see the one in the outfield, Vanessa, where both the outfielders, I want to say it was Myers and McCormick, like they both tried to like pick it up, and it went through both of their legs. I've seen a couple of Little League videos recently where kids are like throwing balls all over the place, and I was like, okay, it's not quite Little League, but it wasn't a good look.
Well, that's kind of how I felt when Pena and Alvarez collided. It's like, guys, we need a little bit of communication here defensively. Ryan Presley is interesting to me. He was great last night. He allowed just one hit. But every time he has a game that's stressful where he doesn't do a good job, he ropes me back in. It is why they call him Ryan Stressley. He's inconsistent, but on nights like last night when he's able to really close it out and get it done, Astros fans love it.
I've never heard that. I love that. That's
Ryan
a fantastic
Stressley.
Nickname.
Shout out to a couple of people on the text line that have repeatedly called him that. I obviously can't call him that on air during pre- and post-game, but on our radio show, I will call him that because it is a little bit dicey sometimes. But last night, again, when the pitching staff, the rotation, when it's on all cylinders, it works.
Bullpens are so funny because you can statistically see a good bullpen right in front of you and still have zero faith in them. Because I know in years past, I felt this exact same way about the Astros bullpen. I was like, I don't know. And statistically, I remember, I think it was Brian McTaggart was like, they have the best numbers in all of baseball in every category. And I was like, yeah, but it's a matter of feeling. It's a matter of eye test. I think that's just a natural thing to do, to not trust a bullpen.
So Paul is a hashtag not a stats guy. When you are a stats guy, if you are a stats guy, you have to trust the bullpen. If you're a gut guy, you say that the bullpen could use some work.
Being a gut guy is funny because you really have no way to back up any of your arguments, but you could lazily just say, yeah, you know, I just don't feel that good. It's in my gut. Yeah, and it's fun because it drives the stat people crazy.
But the stats can get a little – I mean, the stats can get a little annoying because then it's like what percentage of the time should you use stats, which in and of itself is a stat.
It's for nerds, dude.
It is for nerds.
Yo, we ain't no losers here.
No. No, but it is interesting when you have guys like James Click and Dusty Baker that, you know, there's a little bit of an age difference. There's a little bit of, I think, a philosophy difference. That
back
you know,
in 1954, we didn't use none of these advanced statistics. We don't play that.
That
I don't know
Baker
what the hell
voice.
That accent was.
No idea, but it reminded me of your Southern accent that you've used it. To your defense, for some reason, our listeners have actually really enjoyed.
Oh, they
so
like
I guess
it.
The
well,
stats say keep doing it.
Listen, at some point, I might bring it back, but we can't do it right now. So I tweeted out yesterday, Vanessa, something that we've been talking about a couple of times this week about, like, hey, look, right now it's really just a matter of the Astros and Yankees in a race since the AL West is essentially over already. I mean, Seattle's playing pretty well right now, and they're still, what, 14 games back of Houston? So that division race is over, in my honest opinion. So I thought to myself, how about we do something else? Because, you know, talking about the Astros playing against the Royals, that's one thing, but what about the team that they're chasing, the New York Yankees, who are currently 5.5 games ahead of them in the American League race? So this is a working segment topic. It's called Yankees Watch 2022. Sean Mapes, let's hit a little intro music.
Damn Yankees!
Okay.
Whoa,
so guys,
little drop action. Did you make that this morning?
Yeah, I did. So that is from a musical called Those Damn Yankees. It's about the Yankees being good. It was like in the 1950s
about the,
or something like
that. Baseball team?
Yeah, the baseball team. Yes, yes. No, it's not about Northerners.
Well, knowing
not,
you.
It's not about – it is not, Vanessa, about the war of Northern aggression, which was brought upon our doorstep. No, so I thought, okay, let's keep an eye on what the Yankees are doing. So they beat Boston 6-5 last night. They still have 45 games left against teams 500 or above to the Astros 28. I think one of the things that we'll do in our Yankees watch segment that we have going forward, when the games take place in the Bronx, we'll see how many arrests took place, and we'll see if we can find any really funny arrests that took place with all those creatures that are in the outfield. This is, though, the real, I think, development coming out of Yankees Watch 2022. The Pirates announcer, from the game that the Yankees beat the Pirates 16-0 in, which I believe was on Wednesday, did not take kindly to a home run that Aaron Judge hit.
This is ridiculous.
Why is he so mad?
I feel what? Like he thinks the Yankees were running up the score.
This is ridiculous because, but that's, yeah, I mean, come on.
I'll defend the Yankees there. Like, look, like, stop sucking.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's really dumb. Also, those people are the worst. The people that, you know, act like you've been there before, stop hitting home runs. If baseball needs anything, it's not for it to be more boring.
No, I think it needs violence, you know.
Oh. I will say this, every time there's a brawl of any sort or a benches clearing situation, it is a little bit refreshing because we get that in football. We don't get that in baseball.
Right, and look, my trashy side piece, the Mariners, they like getting in fights. They're essentially like J-WoW on the Jersey Shore.
Great show.
Yeah.
Great show. I remember actually that came out when I was in high school, and we were – that started a trend.
It did. Vanessa, I was right in the heart of it in college.
Were you GT? What was it? GTL. Were you GTL. Jim Can Laundry?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Cabs are here. We did a Jersey Shore party. And the funny thing was, some people showed up just looking like they normally look like. But yeah. Everyone else dressed up in costumes. I had a big blowout. It was great.
Shout out to Simone Biles. She was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
It was. I wanted to give it's like the one of the highest awards that you can get from the White House. And her fiance, a.k.a. Jonathan Owens of the Houston Texans, was there. So the Texans finally did get to the White House for a meeting with the president, but it wasn't because of a Super Bowl championship. Oh. It was because Simone Biles.
Well, I mean, Simone Biles, top Houston athlete. And that's pretty sick.
Yeah, it was pretty sick.
To win the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, I do got to say, I mean, you know, the last Olympic effort, I get it. You had the bends, and you're the best, one of the best athletes in Houston history. But I don't know. I mean, the Presidential Medal of Freedom would have made a little more sense after, I think, a successful Olympic campaign.
This is why I brought it up.
You knew I would do this?
Yes.
Also,
God.
Also, the bends is what you get when you scuba dive and change altitude too fast.
Oh, she got the twists.
The twisties, I think.
The twisties.
It was something cute. But I also saw she was the youngest recipient of the, or youngest athlete.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
Who broke Tiger Woods' record when he was like in his late 40s.
Damn,
which
son.
Makes me ask, most unbreakable record in sports,
ooh,
being a 25-year-old getting the Medal of Freedom.
I mean, that's pretty dope.
She beat it by 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty. I didn't hear the speech. Okay, maybe this makes me a bad radio. I didn't listen to I do wonder, like, why they gave it to her now. And I think, like, with Megan Rapinoe, it was because of some things she's done for LGBT, for that community. But regardless.
Hey, Simone Biles. Hey, what's up? How's it going?
Shout out to Simone Biles. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Draymond Green has thoughts. And anytime Draymond Green has thoughts, we like to play them. But do you agree about his take on Kevin Durant? That's next.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, it's been a little over a week since Kevin Durant said that he wanted to trade out of Brooklyn.
Yes.
And so far, no destination has been named. According to the insiders, the Nets are having a difficult time finding a proper suitor. I thought Brian Windhorst brought up a good point this morning on Get Up on ESPN. He said that this is kind of just the reality a lot of times with superstars. He brought up even when Charles Barkley asked out of Philly, the reality is that these teams a lot of times and these franchises realize that they're not going to get equal trade value.
Which is interesting because you've seen at least one of the offers that was made by Minnesota. That Brooklyn asked for from Minnesota, and they asked for Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, who everyone loves, and four draft picks in exchange for Durant, and the Timberwolves declined. A couple of years ago, I don't think Minnesota thinks twice about that. But the problem is, I think now with Durant, it's not that he's not still a great player, but it is, he can't single-handedly take over a game. And I think you saw in the playoffs against Boston with the way that Boston really shut him down specifically that he's not the destroyer of worlds that he used to be along with LeBron James a couple of years ago. You can actually contain him if he doesn't have help around him. And if you're Minnesota and you're trading away your whole team outside of Rudy Gobert, who you signed to that dumb contract, it doesn't make sense.
That was a dumb contract. That was also a just really shocking trade.
Yep, it was.
Brian Windhorst, like I said this morning on Get Up, here's a little bit more nuance and detail on that situation involving Kevin Durant.
From what I can tell, that bidding war isn't really hot right now. The teams have made their offers, and they don't really feel the need to increase them. Now, maybe we'll see a little bit of action coming out of Summer League. All of the executives are gathering in Las Vegas over the next few days, and there could be a restart in action there. But there, you know, there's been a couple of things that have happened that have, you know, even made it more complicated that involve the Utah Jazz. The Jazz make this trade with Rudy Gobert last week, where they get an incredible haul of draft picks, in which the Nets respond by saying, well, now the price for Durant just went higher. And the rest of the league is kind of saying, we don't think so. We don't want to pay that price. We didn't like that trade.
It's kind of the butterfly effect, right? What happens with one team impacts all of these other teams and is going to impact. I have no doubt that Kevin Durant will find, you know, a suitor and a partner, but it is interesting to see what the Nets, I mean, what a different position they're going to be in than they were a year ago.
Oh, definitely. Look, they put it all in to make it work with Durant and with Kyrie and Harden, and now that has totally whiffed. I still think the way I felt yesterday, Brooklyn should hold on to Durant instead of flailing wildly, hoping that a trade partner will materialize out of nowhere. Durant is someone that they have to basically force to play for them. I get it. He's probably never going to want to do it, and he supposedly has all the leverage because he can just not play if he doesn't want to.
That just is shocking to me, though, that can be leveraged nowadays.
You're right, I mean, but it's the norm.
It is the norm. But it's just like, how did we get there? And I'm all for player empowerment in professional sports, but this goes beyond that. This goes beyond player empowerment. This is, nobody's treating him poorly. They've given him what he wanted. He just doesn't want to play for this team.
Yep.
But you know what? We're not shocked that Draymond Green is on the side of Kevin Durant. Here's Draymond Green on that podcast he has that's caused a lot of controversy, but given us great content, right? Here's Draymond Green on how he views the Kevin Durant situation.
People can't accept the fact that athletes are now businessmen and no longer just playing basketball. And at some point, people have to realize and be able to accept the fact that athletes are businessmen and we make business moves and business decisions because you are operating a business. I am operating Draymond Green Inc. or whatever you want to call it. So why, if Draymond Green makes a move, a business move, is it not viewed as just that? Let's talk about the move that's made. Is that a good move for business or is it not? But to start calling somebody weak and they run from challenges, that's baffling to me because that man has worked his entire life to be in that position to where he controls where he goes next. And by the way, everyone in the NBA can't control where they go next. So to be in that position, to have the opportunity to control what you do next, that's the American dream.
He's not wrong, though he is a little insufferable. I rolled my eyes very hard and Vanessa was laughing at him saying, I'm a businessman.
Draymond Green Inc.
Look, if Durant's a businessman, he just went bankrupt, right? I mean, he orchestrated everything that took place with Brooklyn with that power that he has, that Draymond Green outlined. He has the choice to do what he does next. Fine. He just screwed up. So I think that the idea that he's running from a challenge, no, he's running from a sunk ship. I don't think there's that many people out there that are saying that, but Draymond's ignoring that he created this whole situation and he just gets to walk away from it. We talk about it being good for business. It is bad for the greater business of the NBA if a fan base is looking at the product right in front of them and that product can be dismantled in a matter of seconds based off of the wishes of a guy who voluntarily signed a contract to play for that team.
He's still under contract. And Draymond later on that podcast, by the way, because I was curious, so I did listen to it. He's entertaining, if anything, Draymond Green. He compared this to, you know, if somebody works for Apple and they leave for Google or they leave for DocuSign or whatever, nobody gets mad at them. They simply view it as a good business decision. And my response to that is that if somebody works for Google and they're under contract for Google and they try to leave for Apple 2 years before the contract is up, then yes, people would critique it.
People, here's the thing. It's not publicly discussed. I think that's the difference, Vanessa, you're trying to make. But at the same time, you're 100% right. The people who are in the hiring positions there, they will be pissed. you will likely have to get lawyers involved. Because for the most part, like, if you're jumping from corporation to corporation in any industry and you're under contract, there are generally non-compete clauses that prevent you from doing that. I guess there aren't those technically in basketball, because obviously the players sign contracts and those contracts can be traded to other teams, and that happens on a regular basis. But I think it's apples to oranges to make the comparison to, you know, the real world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he's also just ignoring the fact that in the real world, like you said, there are not these stringent contracts. And, you know, you have a company where, like, let's say you started a company and they give you everything you want. You can hire all your friends. You can have your office located wherever you want in the country. You can do all these things. You can make, and you're making millions and millions of dollars. And then, you know, you're under a contract, and a year into it, you say, well, you know what? I don't really want to be here anymore. Peace. I do think people would judge you for that. I do think people would even judge businessmen for that. So I understand. I think where Draymond's coming from, and a lot of players are coming from, is that they want to have other players' backs. But this just was obnoxious to me. We have Gary on the line talking about Draymond Green. Gary, what's up?
Hey, just want to weigh in. Draymond Green is a clown. He's been a clown. He was born on third and thought that he hit a triple. He's the fourth probably best player on this Warriors team. And he just runs his mouth and he gets so much media attention. That is not a business. He signed a four-year contract when he didn't have to. LeBron James, when he went back to Cleveland, signed one-plus-one contract.
It's a great
point.
Gave
him leverage. You can't sign a four-year contract and then say you want out and then say that's player empowerment. That's a breach of contract. Like, I'm so sick of hearing him talk. Like, I just really wish people would give him less attention. Not you guys. I get it. He's in the news. But born on third, thought he hit a triple, needs to shut up.
Thanks,
That's
Gary.
All I have to
hey,
say
we appreciate the call. We appreciate you listening. Yeah. Nah. I mean, I get what Gary's saying.
First part of Gary's call, I get the annoyance with Draymond, especially here. That said, I mean, Draymond's business has always been to be an agitator, and now he is bringing it into the media
world.
He's
being very successful.
And I got to say, that business is going to be successful at this level. I find him to be tremendously entertaining, even if I don't agree with him all the time. And I think that's a skill, if you can be entertaining when people are disagreeing with you. But to the second part of it, Gary's 100% right about the one-on-ones. I have a lot more respect, and it's interesting, we're going to talk about this a little bit later today, Vanessa, because it's the 12-year anniversary of the decision. But
take my talents.
I have a lot more respect for LeBron for doing the contracts that way. It makes a lot more sense to hold leverage as opposed to doing what James Harden did, which was stopping playing, period. What Kyrie Irving did, what Ben Simmons did, what Kevin Durant could do. Like, that is gross. And basketball does need to step in there and just stop players from saying, yeah, I'm not going to play. Okay, you don't want to go to certain teams? Sign a no-trade clause. Negotiate for a no-trade
right.
clause. If you want to have the leverage to move from one place to another and have power over the entire organization, sign the kind of contracts that LeBron does. I think right now, though, a lot of players are thinking to themselves, I can just sit out and it'll work. And the problem is, you know, we could blame the players, but the owners have been giant wusses in
and
this
they've
too.
Allowed it to happen. And how many conversations do you think happen among NFL owners regularly where they say, we are not going to let the NFL become the NBA, even though with the Deshaun contract, you kind of saw it. Draymond also is able to finish the thought on Draymond, Paul, because I agree with you. He's also able to be the aggregator without being overtly disgusting about it, like Stephen A. and Skip and the older guys that just say things that you can tell they don't even mean.
Yeah.
Draymond, I think, at least means what he says the majority of the time.
How long will that last?
Yeah, we'll see. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, speaking of the NFL, 61 days until the season. We're asking you NFL-related questions. We want your opinion. Don't miss it. But first, Paul's going to tell you about PIN.
Passive Investor Network, baby. Listen, we all want to make money. Sometimes we can make money through real estate, and that's what my friends at the Passive Investor Network can help you with. Prices are going up everywhere, right? Don't you want to get in while you still can? Don't you want to have some property that you can own down the line? Well, that's what the Passive Investor Network will do with you. First off, they sit down with you with a five-year plan with realistic goals for you and your family so that down the road, you're going to be making some cheddar off of properties that you have. And the way that the Passive Investor Network does it is awesome. They go around town, they scout, and they find locations that they know are going to be awesome in a couple of years. They get in on the ground floor. They start the turnarounds. They rebuild some of these houses and turn them into just palaces. The Passive Investor Network shows you these on their bus tours, and you can register for the bus tour, passiveinvestor.net. You get some food along the way. You get to meet some of the people at the Passive Investor Network, and they tell you about the whole plan and sit down with you afterwards. Passiveinvestor.net. The promo code is ESPN to go on that bus tour for free. Passiveinvestor.net, promo code ESPN. It's the Passive Investor Network.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
We are back and we are rolling along on a Friday TGIF. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant joining us remotely as he continues to heal from the Rona. But he's feeling good. We're all feeling good on this Friday. Sean Mapes behind the glass. And we know that you're feeling good out there because only 61 days until the NFL season, regular season, kicks off. That's only 9 Sundays. I was thinking about this earlier. It's either 8 or 9 Sundays. So when I think about it like that, it doesn't seem as long.
That makes it seem a lot better. The number 61 for today is a Pearland Man. R.I.P.
Really?
To Hall of Famer Curly Culp. Did you know Curly Culp, before his time in the NFL, was a national champion heavyweight wrestler at Arizona State? The Broncos signed him. They wanted him to play guard, and he was like, nah. So he signed with the Chiefs. The Chiefs moved him to nose tackle, and when he was moved to nose tackle, he basically helped start what is now known as the 3-4 defense. So they have this guy playing nose tackle who was an absolute monster for Kansas City, the foundational piece, helped them beat Minnesota in Super Bowl IV. The Houston Oilers traded for him. He was the defensive player of the year in 1975,
wow,
where as a nose tackle, again, as a nose tackle in the 3-4, just think about this position, how tough it is. He had 11.5 unofficial sacks. They didn't record sacks at the time. He also played for the Lions, AFL champion, Super Bowl IV champion, 4-time second-team All-Pro, 6-time Pro Bowler. We wish that we knew how many sacks that he had, but his legacy is the 3-4 defense would not exist without Curly Culp. So number 61, from H-Town, it's Curly Culp.
When he died, that it was in November. I remember
right.
We did a couple of segments
pancreatic
on him.
Cancer.
Yeah, for KPRC. He was an absolute legend, and people here certainly loved him. Shout out to Curly Culp, man.
Hell yeah.
The legacy lives on. All right, so our NFL topic of the day, it does involve some controversy. The Raiders did something.
That's good.
It was good.
And very good.
I will say this person is extremely qualified, especially when you look at some of the things that she's done. The Raiders hired Sandra Douglas Morgan as their new president.
Mm-hmm.
So she's the first person of color to serve as chair of the Nevada Gaming Control Board, which in Nevada, the Gaming Control Board, have you seen Yellowstone, basically runs everything.
Mm-hmm.
First African-American city attorney in the state of Nevada. And she was most recently with a really, really high-profile law firm. So she's the first black woman to serve. Actually, I think the first woman of color to serve in this position for any team. So this was a historic day.
It was.
You had some questions, Paul, which I think
I
is fair about
I wish
the...
I wasn't a cynic. I really do.
Well, it makes for good radio. So go ahead and tell us why you are a little bit cynical about this.
I do want to give the Raiders a little bit of credit from this perspective. They have been pioneers in a lot of different ways over the course of their history in terms of especially hiring people. They obviously are the Raiders. A lot of people don't like them, but I think that there's a lot of things that, and especially during the days of Al Davis, that they did that you look at and you're like, all right, these guys were ahead of the curve as far as a lot of things. But the last team president of the Raiders quit after alleging workplace harassment from, get this, owner Mark Davis. I want to believe that this is a hire that is being done not to distract people from what has been a very messy last year for the Raiders. John Gruden's emails, Henry Ruggs and the DUI manslaughter,
right,
and this Mark Davis story. To me, I look at this and I'm happy for Sandra Douglas Morgan, but I do feel like it feels as if it's a classic misdirection.
I think that there's definitely strategy behind it. When you look at everything, like you said, that's happened with the Raiders, not even this season, but things that happened 5, 4, whatever years ago involving John Gruden when he wasn't even in the Raiders, but yet that has reflected on the Raiders. How long did they know that John Gruden was like that, etc.? It's unfortunate that somebody like her, where she's is qualified. I mean, you look at the positions she's had in Nevada. Again, president of the chairwoman of the gaming commission in Nevada is like beyond politics. It's like you're one of the most powerful people because you're determining so much for the casinos. So I have no doubt that she's got amazing connections. She's more than qualified. My angle on it is it takes too long to put people like this in power because we've stuck with the boys club for so long. But I think she's going to do a great job. Hopefully she's able to turn the Raiders around and help turn the Raiders around. And from a football angle, you know, you certainly look at where the Raiders are at and where they could be. They're in the toughest division this year. But man, if she can help make some decisions on the football side that make them even better. I believe in Derek Carr. I've said they're my dark horse. I think that they could be really good.
I feel like with, on top of that, Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones, there's a lot of interesting things about them. And also just think about the difference that we saw from Derek Carr last year in a season where he did not have Devontae Adams. He actually showed some chutzpah throwing the football down the field. I remember there was a game, I think they were playing the Chargers, and I want to say it was Joey Bosa who was asked about Derek Carr, and he basically said, yeah, we pressure him, and he's going to crumble, which is accurate for a lot of quarterbacks. But to Carr's credit, I don't know. I don't know what happened last year, but he had a little more balls about him. And I think with Josh McDaniels working with him, too.
Looked incredible against Indy. I mean, against Indianapolis, you're like, man, if you can get this guy a solid weapon, he's going to be even better. So what are your realistic expectations for the Raiders? You can text us, 713-780-ESPN. You can tweet us. We've asked you on Twitch. Realistic expectations for the Raiders, not only from the football angle, but as a franchise, how do they move forward? And how are they going to be able to do as they are the best team in they're in the AFC, but they're in a really, really good division with the Chargers, obviously, and the Chiefs and Broncos country. Let's ride?
Broncos. No, don't ride. Ride off a cliff. I don't want to hear Russell Wilson say that one more time. God, he's going to say, the over-under, it's got to be like 132. Because he will do it at the end of every single press conference that he does this year.
Let's ride.
Todd the Show on Twitch says the Raiders will win their division. Number one, Raiders. Number two, Chargers. Number three, Chiefs. Number four, Broncos. Broncos coming in fourth, I could definitely see.
I could too.
And Paul has made it clear he's not the biggest Russell Wilson fan. For me, it's not that I don't like Russell Wilson. I just think that when you look at the complete teams, I think Justin Herbert could break out. Sean, you're a Justin Herbert believer.
Yes, I'm a Justin Herbert believer. I do think that the Raiders will be fighting with the Broncos for third and fourth place in this division. I think it'll kind of separate a little bit between the top two and bottom two, but I think those two teams are very equally matched in both respects. But I do think it's a little bit more staggered at the top than most people.
AFC West, baby.
Yeah. To quote the great Patrice O'Neill, when it comes to Russell Wilson, it all boils down to this: man, you corny.
He is corny. There's one thing, he is corny. All right. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Speaking of corny, some of these tweets that people put out about the Deshaun Watson situation are brutal to read. We're going to talk about that and a little bit of SEC talk. That's coming up next.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now. Do it. Do it. Do it now.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So since Paul's remote, every time one of us is remote, we do like a Zoom meeting or a cloud meeting or whatever they're called. virtual meeting, and I'm trying to figure it out on my laptop, and I feel like a 60-year-old man. I'm like, wait, I need to download the browser. I need to blah, blah, blah. It's not good.
Yeah, it's sometimes difficult technology. I spent this morning, I finally got my computer back after basically like a month and a half.
Yeah, okay, you did.
And what's driving me crazy, though, this morning is there's some issues that are taking place, very minor ones. So I was basically in a chat with somebody at, I want to say, Microsoft for a good 50 minutes. And I said the issue from the beginning. Like, I explained it to them. I know what the issue is.
Right.
And I know this is turning into Wine Friday, but they took 50 minutes to say, oh, this is the issue you're dealing with. And I was like, yes, I know. That's the only reason I'm in this chat. Otherwise, I would take care of it.
That's the worst.
So I got my money back for something that I spent way too much money on. Windows 10 should not cost $150. I'm sorry. That is outrageous. So,
well, it's like the Geek Squad guys at Best Buy. Literally all they do is Google. When I found that out, I felt so stupid.
That's and they'll copy and paste comments to you where
it's just so demeaning.
They act like, oh yeah, we're here for you, we care. It's no, you copy and pasted this is in fact, you copy and pasted the first six messages I got. Terrible.
Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, anyway, that's customer service today. You can't talk to someone on the phone.
I like just want to talk to a human. I just want to, and you know what, once you talk to a human, the problem is almost always solved.
Generally,
anyway,
yes, as long as you're nice. I mean, don't be a jerk to people in customer service. The chats are just so frustrating. They'll take like 3 minutes to respond.
Brutal.
And then they'll say, oh, are you still there, when you take 3 minutes to respond, and they'll disconnect you. Awful.
Yesterday when I was arranging a sofa delivery, it's a robot. Hello, Vanessa Richardson. Do you still live at blah, blah, blah? I'm like, creepy, weird. Just put me with a person. All right, we're rolling along on a Friday, and obnoxious Deshaun Watson update. Look, I understand, Paul, the world we're living in where people feel like they need to have an update every day. They need to prove that they have sources. They need to prove that they know this person, this person, this person. But this from Josina Anderson was too much. Part of a 3 or 4 tweet thread. Quote, I'm told there's a recording of an interview with the adult son of one of 12 women the NFL interviewed in the Watson case, where he says his mom was initially complimentary of Watson, but later switched her account and the tone after negative allegations surfaced. The son basically said his mother intended to reward his silence. Per league source, wonder who that is, there's a feeling that the NFL was initially cagey about details they learned from the woman's son, after only mentioning they interviewed him in their report. The son's recording was later reviewed by Watson's side, revealing the aforementioned details, presumably illuminating why this particular accuser was not included with the 5 women. I was also told the NFL presented no evidence of violence, force, threat, or coercion in the allegations of the 5 women they focused on at the hearing.
Okay, so first off, to keep in a nutshell, here's what Josina Anderson said. David Mulugeta told me that one of the people that is part of the NFL's investigation maybe doesn't have a solid case. By the way, I was told this.
She always flexes.
Did
like
you
that.
Know I was told this because I have access? This is Josina Anderson in a nutshell. And honestly, not to fault just Josina, this is how a lot of the NFL information brokers work, where they talk to an agent and the agent tells them what to say. This isn't an update, but people can run with this update, and some people will say, oh, well, looks like there is a crack in the case against Deshaun Watson. This is one of the 12 that the NFL is talking to. This is one of the 26 who have civil suits against him. So really, my big question is, what was the point of this report by Josina Anderson, other than to say, hey guys, I'm connected? Like, that's
really
all I get from it.
And the good litmus test, too, is go look at the Twitter feeds of Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, Tom Pelt. Not a single one of them retweeted this. Not a single one of them. Now, Josina's with CBS now, so they're not her coworkers. But if it were a legit report worth talking about, they would have picked up on it. They would have talked about it. For me, the other problem I have is the wording. Quote, aforementioned details, presumably illuminating why this particular, like, at least change the words that David Mulugeta or whoever is sending you. Like, at least clean your tweets up a little bit to where you're not copying and pasting a text from an agent.
By the way, she's told there's a recording. She doesn't have the recording.
Correct.
How about show us the recording? What are the contents of, what's the content of that?
Show me the money. I'm all about it. Like, with this case, and, you know, she says there's no proof of blah, blah, blah. Of course there's not. Like, these are things that happen behind closed doors. I've said from the beginning, everything with Deshaun Watson, I just want the truth to come out. The truth is going to be difficult because it's word versus word. Whatever the case is in each of these, and you know what? No two cases are exactly alike. Maybe there are some women that are lying. Maybe there are some women that aren't. But from a reporting level, it sums up the frustration from this entire case. I remember I was, and I'll flex just a little
Do
bit
it.
Here.
Do it.
I'm literally flexing right now.
Look at those biceps. Hell yeah.
Yeah. I did break the story that Deshaun Watson was going to come out and say he had consensual sex with some of these women. I broke it, whatever. It was last year. Rusty Harden later that day confirmed it and sent out a press release and said, yes, my client did have consensual sex with some of these women. Do you know the ropes that I went through with my newsroom in order to make sure that that was properly worded and that I didn't go on there and make it sound like I was saying, hey, Deshaun had consensual sex? No, it's sources tell me Deshaun Watson is going to claim he had consensual sex with Elise. And with Josina Anderson, she's a veteran. She's done this for a long time. But I think that it was very poorly worded. And look, let's criticize Adam Schefter. Let's be fair. He had that tweet that people came down on him for where he did the same thing. He said Deshaun Watson's people have been, you know, waiting for the day where they can blah, blah, blah. It's like you have to be so careful. And media folks are just being super careless.
Right. Or they are just trying to prove that they still have worth.
Right.
You're not working at ESPN anymore as one of the prominent NFL reporters. And I would be probably annoyed, too. But, I mean, I really want the follow-up to this because this was the tweet right before that series of four tweets, which, by the way, she does not know how to put together a Twitter thread.
It's really bad.
Which that made me more annoyed than anything. How you link all these tweets together? You should not be technologically challenged as an NFL reporter. But she posted this after the Baker Mayfield trade yesterday. Yes, Baker Mayfield trade to Carolina is confirmed pending a physical, ... I'm on the beach and we'll have more later.
Help.
Excuse me. I want the more now. And the more has not come. There is no more. Check her Twitter. There is no more.
I'm on the beach.
Was drunk tweeting from the beach, Vanessa. I was drunk tweeting from the beach in Puerto Rico. I had a sick tweet about Washington football fans and Oregon football fans and how they're not fun to hang out with. Boom. It was a great piece of content. I was hammered on a beach in Puerto Rico drinking Medalla. She's got to do her job. I'm on the beach. Oh, what are you doing? You're tanning? You can look at your phone while you're tanning.
It's essentially, I wasn't on this first because I'm on the beach. It's very lame.
Confirmed.
Yeah. Like, thank
Shut
you
up.
For confirming it. It just speaks to the culture that we're in too, where people want to be first instead of being completely accurate. They want to flex. They want to act like they know. Just admit that you don't know. Speaking of people that don't know, the great transitions continue. Somebody named Brandon Keith on Twitter said, source, North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia are all negotiating to join the SEC. Oh. ESPN is trying to avoid their TV deal with the ACC. This was quickly batted down, but it shows you how people do not have critical thinking skills or the ability to look at a person and say, has this person ever broken news before? Would it be possible that they're even the ones breaking these news again? Because Heather Dinich not saying anything. The people that are actually legit not saying anything. People really ran with this. And my favorite, I wish I'd pulled the sound bite, but my favorite was Chris Long, who is obviously a Virginia alum, is absolutely hilarious, uploaded this really sarcastic video in a Southern accent where he says, hey, kids, I can't talk. His kids are in the background. Kids, I can't talk right now. I just found out Virginia's going to join the SEC. Yeah, Virginia Tech, you can't come along because you're not Southern like we are. A total sarcastic, you know, Southern accent video, quote unquote, confirming this. And all these people attack him saying, it's not true. It's not true. And it's like that was the point of the video of Chris Long being sarcastic. But no shocker, this was quickly batted away as not being fact.
Don't be sarcastic on the internet. It'll only let you down. But Well, that said, Vanessa, I do declare it would make a tremendous amount of sense for my beloved Southeastern Football Conference. It just means more to add two of these programs. Now, maybe not Florida State anymore, because Florida State has not been good for quite some time. But Clemson makes so much sense in the SEC. If you add Clemson to a conference that already features the superpowers of the Southeast, this is the lone holdover. You must add them to this house.
I do like the Southern accent that you have. It will forever and always remind me of Michael
Scott.
Just made
me cough.
On the murder mystery. Delta Bug, I do declare. But that was a funny video from Chris Long. Yeah, sarcasm not well received on Twitter, but the majority of people that are legit reporters say that North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia are not joining the SEC.
Hold on. Braden Keith is a legit reporter. Whoa. He is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Swim Swam News. All right?
That sounds legit.
Vanessa,
I think that's real.
If you can't believe.
Is that real?
Yes.
Yes.
Swim Swam, news, lifestyle, training, video, gear, and open water. The best swimming coverage on the web.
I do declare, Sean, I appreciate you bringing this knowledge to our attention. Vanessa, a Yankee, do not respect the journalistic integrity of a Southerner. This is to be expected from someone from Indiana, where they eat jumbo shrimp at St. Elmo's and act as if this shrimp has not been radioactively tainted by one of the Great Lakes to their north.
Hey, first of all, I'm not trusting anybody with breaking news named Braden, Caden, Aiden, Schladen.
Whoa.
If your name is ends in that, I'm sorry, I don't trust you. It's too basic.
Braden is definitely high on the list of bleep boy names.
Right.
No offense to all the Bradens out
Braden,
there.
Braden, Chet, Chad, not happening.
You're going to need a Tom or a Mike to verify.
Yeah. It needs to be a Tom, a Mike, a Jim, a James.
Give me a Joe.
I need a Joe, you know, a big Joe, whatever. Braden Keith's latest tweet from 37 minutes ago. To all my new followers, please promise you'll stick around and read about some swimming over the next few months. We've got some great stuff coming up, including the U.S. National Championships. The other tweet, almost every college football board in the country is currently debating my sanity. Swim people are crazy, but football people are on a whole different level. No dip, brother. You think that swim people are crazy, but football people are on a different level than swimming fans?
I don't know. Swimming fans are pretty intense. I mean, there's a movie called Swim Fan about a stalker.
Swim?
I think Julia Stiles was in that movie. Yeah.
Julia Stiles isn't even the best Julia. That's for Julia. And you know what? I do trust actresses named Julia. I don't trust reporters named Braden.
I've never seen Swim Fan, but Swim Fan is a 2002 American teen psychological thriller starring...
Wow.
Oh, it doesn't...
Congrats to Paul on having Google.
My bad. It does not star... I thought it starred Julia Stiles for some reason. Jesse Bradford, Erica Christensen, and Shiri Appleby.
What are we doing?
I don't know.
Shout out to Braden, though.
I don't want
to
watch
Swim
it now.
Swam News. coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're not going to talk swimming. We're going to talk Astros as well as a fun summer league watch for the Rockets. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.